Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about current events as they relate to federal employment, VSIPs, VERAs, and looking ahead. And to guide us in the dark of the night is Bob Bronstein, retired Fed and early out retired Fed.
Yeah, I'm a poster child for early out.
So
I got a VSIP too.
V-SIP
14 years ago, hard to believe.
Okay, and Bob is also a federal benefit strategist and seminar presenter with NITP and. Followed the storm up from Puerto Rico. He didn't just start in Florida where he lives. He started in Puerto Rico.
And that's because you sent me there. Amazing. Irene loves me so much, my wife is getting jealous.
All righty, Bob. Current events.
Yeah.
You know, we're looking at Congress. They want to reduce the federal workforce. Do they want to cut the budgets? And, of course, we don't know. Nobody's really going to know for a while. But what should one be looking at? Let's do the easier one first. If they're going to cut the budget non-payroll, what do you think they're looking at?
Probably, you know, programs. It's the way I would phrase this is that we're in a time now where clearly the government is going to be doing a certain amount of cost cutting. It's being mandated. It's being batted back and forth by Congress. There's a super committee that could be proposing some serious cuts. I think that this is going to set in motion a lot of organizations, a lot of federal agencies considering requesting early out authority from the Office of Personnel Management. Early out authority is sometimes referred to as voluntary early retirement authority, also known as VERA. Some agencies, like the Defense Department, have this automatically. They don't even need to request it from OPM. But what a VERA does is, in essence, opens the window for early retirement for people who otherwise wouldn't be eligible to go for many years to come. And the advantage in these situations is that if we get enough people who meet those criteria to go early under a VERA window, then an agency doesn't have to do costly RIFs and other kind of nasty things associated with realignments, restructuring, and cost cutting. So I think we're going to start seeing a lot of organizations actually asking for VERA authority and many, many more opportunities for people to retire early and possibly even get voluntary separation incentive pay to go along with it.
Without name, are there some agencies that would be more susceptible to this than others? Like, you might not want to fool with the intelligence community, the security agencies.
Right. Right.
Where maybe some of the other ones wouldn't be as much of the proverbial sacred cow.
Absolutely. And, I mean, even though DHS is actually thinking about requesting early out authority, it's not specific at this point. There's some law enforcement agencies that are absolutely not doing it. You do see, well, the Postal Service, which technically isn't a federal agency, is looking at cutting 7,500 jobs. Even the Air Force is looking at trimming back 4,000 positions in its civilian workforce. It sort of depends on agency to agency. Some organizations are actually beefing up and not reducing at all. Others are considering, you know, cutting back some of their non-essential functions.
Well, me as an outsider, I did work for the feds for a while. I'm not going to tell you I'm anywhere near a career type, but I did work. But as a, you know, private industry type, I don't know that we're any different than the feds. You have to cut your budgets. But if I were sitting there as a private industry type, I would probably look to say, where can I save money? Not on pens and pencils or toner or computers and et cetera, but where can I cut my overhead and then look for the weaker links in the chain and then cut those? But is that the same? We talked about this a little bit in the proverbial green room,
right?
Before the show. Is the mindset the same with the feds?
The biggest cost consideration in government is, of course, workforce. That's the largest expense. And really, effective cost cutting generally will cause positions to go away. And what you have to do, if you don't have authority to give early retirements, You're looking at situations where you have to run costly and discombobulating, to use a word, reductions in force, which are time-consuming. They require setting up complex retention registers. They often wind up in the release of individuals that the organization or the agency does not want to lose. Not that senior folks who are on the rolls are bad people or poor performers, but some of the newer hires that you have are going to be susceptible because the retention standing is going to be lower than the folks who have been around long enough. So what this really is an opportunity for an organization to mitigate that, get out in front of it by understanding what its impact is going to be and providing opportunities for people who meet specific age and service criteria to go early and giving them incentive to do that. Not that everybody's going to take it, but it does mitigate some of the downsizing effects of involuntary situations where you actually have to get rid of people who aren't otherwise eligible to retire. Some people would be, even in involuntary situations. Those are called discontinued service retirements, which actually have the same age and service criteria, but they're not voluntary. You're just gone because your job's not there anymore, or your job has been moved outside of your commuting area, and you're not going to go with it. It's a tool, and it's not a be-all and end-all, but it's a valuable tool and a great planning tool for organizations that are facing imminent cutbacks and know that it's going to have a dramatic impact on the size of their workforce.
I would think, too, that the senior-level folks might be more susceptible, but you don't want the, again, proverbial brain drain if they were the targets, but maybe there's a few there because each year as they stay, the pension costs in the future, as well as the salary costs currently, are high. Please, nobody listening say, he said we should get rid of all the senior-level people, which,
please.
Of course, I would be one. But
I definitely am one. Never thought I'd get there, but I'm glad I am. No, what you say is true. But, you know, the good news, too, is that there are even situations where you could leave under that scenario and come back to work either contractually or you could come back to work in a temporary job as a reemployed annuitant, which, you know, we could talk about that forever, where your salary isn't even offset by your pension. There are lots of different things you can do. I think the critical thing for anyone to consider who's actually given an offer, who qualifies for early out, is, well, am I really retiring? You know, you aren't really. You might be getting a pension, and the good news is that you're taking your benefits with you as well if you qualify to do that. What you have is a tremendous amount of leverage to consider other options. I mean, I faced this, and when I left the federal government, I had 30 years of service at the ripe old age of 49. So I took a reduced pension being under the age of 55 since I retired under CSRS, but it was about 50% of my high three. Most importantly, I was able to take health benefits with me. So I was able to really leverage that package when I went to negotiate salaries in some firms that I worked for. But what I really was able to do was work for multiple employers. When you have your benefits, you can do contracts. And you don't need the full compensation package because you don't need the health insurance. You wind up building networks. And over time, you're able to steer yourself to the things that you find you like doing more than anything else. It's how I wound up at NITP. I mean, through my network and through a variety of different contractual assignments, I hooked up with James Marshall, who's one of our speakers, and he referred me to you. And for the last 5 years, I've been doing the most fun work I've ever been able to do. And, you know, this is as a retiree.
And we love it, too.
So it's really very fortunate.
But, I mean, you have the genes in you to say, okay, I'm 49. I'm not going to proverbial play golf. I'm going to go out and I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. And I get the distinct impression that you do enjoy what you do.
Absolutely. And, you know, at the time I left, and I think a lot of folks will be facing this too, Bob, is when if you're 50 and you have 20-some-odd years of service, or if you have 25 years of service, and many first people do, and they're still in their early to mid-40s, likely you have young children. I mean, this isn't a chance to absolutely out-and-out retire, but what it is it's an opportunity to go on to other things with a decent floor of income, benefits, and tremendous leverage to explore. I mean, and in the Washington area, there are lots of opportunities. I I think the opportunity to work contractually is quite prevalent, and it's not an option for you if you need a health benefits package, but if you don't, it really is, and you can do more than one contract.
And you bring to the table seasoning at the federal level and seasoning outside. So somebody like NITP, wow, this guy's available.
It's true. Well, and when I left, the government was doing quite a bit of, I guess you'd say, downsizing or right-sizing of human resources activities, a non-inherently governmental function. And as it happens, there are opportunities externally now to bring that expertise that I was able to gain as a federal employee back into the workforce by being a speaker for NITP.
All right. Let's use some of these acronyms because,
sure,
of course, you're fluent on this and I'm not. What should we do first, the VSIP or the VERA?
Well, VERA, again, is the authority that you request from OPM in order to enable you to allow persons of certain age and service criteria to retire. And a VERA can be accompanied by a request for voluntary separation incentive pay, or VSIP, because early retirement alone oftentimes is not significant incentive for the people in the window who meet the criteria to go. So a buyout might be something that would push someone teetering on the edge of, yeah, I want to do this, give them that final push to accept the offer. And again, accepting the offer, you have to almost look at it as perhaps that's saving somebody's job who otherwise wouldn't be eligible to retire at all and would be out on the street. So VERA, VSIP sometimes are hand in hand. It truly depends. It's what the agency requests. It's what the Office of Personnel Management approves.
Okay, so what does VERA stand for? V-E-R-A, right?
Voluntary Early Retirement Authority. And if you have requested and obtained this authority from OPM for either your entire workforce or surgically for certain organizations within your workforce, employees within the range of 50 years of age, 20 years of service, or 25 years of service at any age would be eligible to retire immediately.
Okay, we got a call, not on this subject, but maybe a tangent to the subject.
Oh, good.
And a young lady is a CSRS employee looking at retiring at the end of this year. And the question is, when should she retire, December 31st or January 2nd? Because there's a holiday in there, there's some confusion. Is that right, Esther?
That's right.
Okay.
That's a great question. If memory serves me, this is one of those rare years where the leave year ends on December 31st. So I would ask you, do you have a lot of annual leave? In other words, did you carry your ceiling over and you still have some use or lose leave that you could receive in a lump sum payment?
Yes.
Okay. Oh. If that's the case, then the only way you can get the use or lose in your payment is to retire on or before the end of the leave year. Now, technically, CSRS people can retire the first, second, or third of the month, but again, you'd need to retire by the 31st to get the biggest possible lump sum annual leave check.
Okay.
Okay, now, let's take it your lump sum leave check. I'm a tax type, Esther,
yes.
So let me say a couple things about that. You'll get the leave check in the next year, 2012.
6 to 8 weeks later.
Right. And that would be eligible. You could put up to $5,000 or $6,000 into an IRA, depending on your age, and it would be taxed then, with the assumption that your annuity is going to be less than what your salary is. I'm not going to ask you how many years you've been in service because really that's none of my business. But but the point is you've deferred the taxes, and then you still have the ability, along with your last salary check, to use that for IRA purposes, not TSP. You can't use the accumulated leave for the TSP. So Bob hit the benefits on the head, and I did a little bit of the tax and economics, so it's kind of a win-win, isn't it?
I want to use the excess and just carry over the max, so I really wanted to get paid next year anyway for the annual. But
So you got it. So you got your desire.
Can I ask you how many hours of annual leave you have at this point in time?
I have 500. I'm going to use the excess, so I'll have the 440 maximum.
Great. See, that's, and again, retiring at the end of the leave year is critical. I mean, in any case, the first creditable day for your pension will be the next day, whether you leave on the 31st or the 1st, the 2nd, or the 3rd. But in your case, in order to get that big chunk of annual leave paid to you in a lump sum, you must leave by the end of the leave year, which is December 31 this year.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Sure enough.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the question.
All right. Then anybody else that'd like to call, we're here and we'll take your calls. 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. That's good. That was a very good benefit question and has some tax and economic spinoffs as well.
Absolutely.
Let's get back to this Vera thing. I don't know why I'm hung up with Vera, but what does Vera stand for again?
Again, Voluntary Early Retirement Authority, requested from the Office of Personnel Management by an organization that's anticipating a certain amount of, I guess you'd say, reduction in their workforce as a result of steps they're taking to economize, right-size, downsize, whatever you want to call it, realign. And accompanied by VSIP, Voluntary Separation Incentive Pay, if they anticipate that it's going to make a difference as far as the targeted population as to who's going to take it, how many people will actually take the offer. I mean, percentage-wise, early retirements without VSIPs usually are not jumped on, particularly in these days of financial uncertainty and the job market being what it is. It's something that would scare a lot of folks. But, you know, it could be that if you get this additional buyout package with it, that could give you some additional financial leverage and it gives you, I guess you'd say, more courage to explore and do other things. I think what organizations truly need to do, though, is through retirement counseling and through seminars, give people the understanding that, look, you know, this isn't retirement per se. If you're going out early, you can line up other things to do. The question is, how competent and how comfortable do you feel in your ability to go out and do that? How long is it going to take? And if it's going to take you a few months, then you do have a pension, you do have your benefits, and the voluntary separation incentive pay, coupled with perhaps a nice lump sum annual leave check, would give you the extra money in the meantime to take the time to do the correct job search and then wind up landing on your feet in something that probably won't even affect your pension.
Is there any consideration given when we're looking at an individual with their service comp date mm-hmm. and say, okay, we have to cut by such and such a date, and that's a month earlier than the service comp date would give them another year of service? Do people ever look at that?
So, you know, that can happen from time to time, and oftentimes annual leave can be used to qualify one for, I know under CSRS, that annual leave can get you to the actual targeted date of eligibility. Unused sick leave can add to a pension amount, but it really can't do anything to extend your time. But I do know that particularly in the case of a discontinued service situation, if you're going to be losing your job, at least under the civil service retirement system, your annual leave, if used, could get you there to that service qualification. Otherwise, if you don't meet the age and service criteria, if you're outside of the window, then you're out of luck. I mean, you could have 20 years of service and be 45. Sorry, that doesn't make it. You've got to be at least age 50. Now, once you have 25 years of service, it doesn't matter how old you are.
Mm.
And that's the same for FERS as it is for CSRS. CSRS also has some other things that FERS doesn't. In other words, if you're getting an early out and you're retiring before the age of 55, say, I have 26 years of service and I'm 53. Well, each year that you're under the age of 55, under the CRS rules, says that your pension, whatever it's going to be, will be reduced by 2% per year. 1/6 of 1% per month. Now, that particular issue does not exist for FERS. Now, FERS people will retire early. The one thing that they need to be thinking about, if they, under the scenario I just mentioned, say I have 25 years of service and I'm leaving in my late 40s, which is often the case, and I'm taking a buyout and I'm getting my annual leave and all of those things, the one thing that a FERS retiree is able to get, which is a bridge to Social Security, is called the FERS annuity supplement. But most employees, unless you're in law enforcement or a firefighter, a special occupational category, retiring early would cause you to have to wait for the annuity supplement until what's known as minimum retirement age. And that's anywhere between 55 and 57, depending upon the month, year in which you were born. So you'd wait for that. And then, of course, if you're still working, it's earnings tested. So that portion of your income would always be earnings tested. The law enforcement community, firefighters, those folks see the FERS annuity supplement as soon as they retire. And they're usually not in early out scenarios because, as it happens, the early out criteria kind of mirror their actual retirement scenario. 50 years of age, 20 years of service, 25 years of service, any age for the FERS folks. So it's a real mixed bag of criteria. You know, a lot of things to be thinking about, a lot of moving parts. The real thing that people need to be thinking about is, if I consider this, you know, what am I going to be doing? You don't usually get a huge amount of time to plan for it. You know, most of us are planning to retire, and we're getting counseled 5 years out, 3 years out, 2 years, going to seminars. All of a sudden, you have a four-month Vera window, and you're thinking, what am I going to do? My thoughts to anyone out there right now is that I do believe that you're going to start seeing a lot more of these authorities requested by agencies, largely because of budgetary constraints and financial cutbacks that are going to exist. You know, and we're hearing about them all the time. That being the case, if you are thinking about, if I had the opportunity to leave early, I could do something else. Now's the time to start really energizing those thoughts, because if you're in the window, if one is to be offered, you're that much better prepared for, what you might do. And it's a dramatic leap. I always tell people there are a lot of dragons to be slain, particularly to the local workforce in Washington. I mean, if you've been doing a lot of work, you bring a lot of institutional knowledge with you. It's amazing how even externally that can come back to the government, and often in an indirect capacity, contractually through another organization, which winds up giving you the opportunity to get your pension, your benefits, and then earn other money. You retire, and that lump sum annual leave check is going to wind up pushing you into another tax bracket because you're still earning a lot of money doing other things.
This is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so in your own case, without being too personal, what got you to grab the pen and sign the paper?
A combination of things. You know, I certainly wasn't in jeopardy of losing my job, not with 30 years of service, but I guess you could say I was a bit plateaued. I'd been around doing the same work for a while, and this was, I don't want to make this sound negative, but, I used to play Monopoly, and you got what's called a get-out-of-jail-free card. Not that my employment was jail, but I really wanted to reinvent myself. I had a lot of things going on. I was getting married again. I had some special events going on with my kids. It gave me an opportunity to take 6 months off. I worked for an organization that was not appropriated by the Congress, the Office of the Comptroller with Currency. And they were not constrained by the $25,000 cap on buyouts that many federal agencies that are appropriated by Congress are. So the buyout was a bit more lucrative. I had a fair amount of annual leave. And I saw this as an opportunity to reinvent myself, certainly not retire. I mean, my daughters were, I think, 10 and 7 respectively. Clearly, I had to keep on working, and I wanted to, but it was an opportunity to just explore work from a different perspective, to go to work for external companies. First place I worked was the National Academy of Public Administration in a Human Resources Center think tank, helping federal agencies become more strategic, more aligned with their missions. And it's through that initial employment that I started developing a network. And word of mouth is an amazing thing. The next thing you know, I was being asked to participate in other projects. I wound up on a terrific project, standing up the TSA and working on benefits teams and other HR organizations that have to this day remain outsourced in TSA. It just gave me, I was looking for more flexibility. And it was a scary little thing. I did take some time off. It's not something to be considered lightly. It's not for the faint of heart. But being faced with eminently losing a job or not really knowing. And I think to some extent, it for me, it was empowering. I was looking to be empowered. I really wanted to have leverage. And as I thought about it, and it proved itself over and over again for me, it gave me the opportunity to negotiate better salary packages, vacation packages, and most importantly, it enabled me to pick and choose the places that I wish to work. I mean, I always tell people, if you don't like your employer, now you have the ability to fire that employer and go to another one and wind up where you really want to. And, you know, working for NITP is doing some of the best work I've ever done. I've always liked presenting. I've always liked teaching. I find it very rewarding. And it's through this whole journey that I took that I wound up, finally meeting somebody that hooked me up with you folks. So it's a great journey. And for me, it was an easy decision. I needed to reinvent myself.
Great. And we'll see that gentleman tonight, won't we?
Yes, we will.
All right. Now, you mentioned something as you were talking. Are there some proverbial sacred cows, if you have an agency and you have, okay, these people are some kind of, if they're senior folks, veterans, do veterans get preference over non-vets?
Absolutely. I mean, without going into a huge discussion of retention standing and building retention registers and reductions in force, I went through that one time many, many years ago. It's extremely complex. There are different major tenuring groups, 1, 2, and 3, subgroups within those tenuring groups, and then chief among which, in any of them, veterans will always be retained over non-veterans, which is the way it should be. So it's building a retention register is a monumental task, and then releasing people in accordance with their seniority is also monumental. It requires a tremendous amount of study. You've got to send notices out to people, letting them know what's going to happen. You wind up, and once again, I don't want this to sound negative, often losing people that you do not wish to lose. You ask anybody if you're given the option of running a RIF or not running one, they'll say, don't do it. Do everything but, because it's a drain. It's an emotional mess. It creates all kinds of angst for agencies and the people affected. If you can do anything to prepare for it, anything to mitigate it, run a VERA, do it, run several of them. Defense agencies have pretty much open authority to do this because they're always trimming back, and they don't have to reach out and request it. Some organizations are doing rolling VERAs every year. They know that there's certain number of people within the organization are going to be given an opportunity to be released. So that even gives people in those environments an opportunity to think about it. It's kind of planning for early retirement.
In one's budget, let's say I was faced with this and I work for Uncle and I say, okay, if I let this person go and that person go, I'm really going to miss their ability to make the agency's mission hum. Can I bring them back half-time as a contractor?
Well, the Defense Authorization Bill of 2010 has among its numerous provisions the ability to bring back, excuse me, temporarily, employees who, even if they're pensioned, can come back to work as reemployed annuitants for usually 1,000 hours a year for up to 3 years. I mean, if that's what we're talking about, somebody in that situation, then the beauty of that is that the person who comes back does not suffer an offset to salary that would be their pension. Now, there are other ways people can come back and not lose their pensions, but those require dual compensation waivers, and those are stingily given only in rare situations. I think, what you're really looking for to bring people back is critical skill sets. You know, even agencies that have this ability to bring folks back temporarily can only do it for 2% of their workforce. It wasn't meant to be used as a panacea or to be used broadly. It's used in critical situations. The best way to come back and work and doing the same things that you were doing before, assuming there's still a need, is to do it as a contractor, through not directly, but to come through another organization and do the work contractually. That way you don't worry about it. You get receive full pay for the pension that you're receiving, if you're getting one. and then the salary that you earn will not affect your pension unless you're getting a FERS supplement, and that piece of your pension is going to be earnings tested, like so early Social Security. So it could be you're working your way out of your FERS supplement, but the good news is that the money you're earning from the new job is significantly higher than that FERS supplement was anyway.
If this takes place in a particular agency and say there's 1,000 people that work there, I'm just pulling these numbers out of the sky, and we have to reduce the level to 900, just pulling these numbers out of the sky, is then there is a, if you will, a hard cap on the 900 people that are left for years to come? So in other words, we just didn't let 100 people go, and then next year we bring 10 back, and next year we bring another 10 back. And do they monitor stuff like that?
I think it truly depends upon need. Tammy recently wrote an article and was stating that some organizations are beefing up, some are cutting back. I guess it truly depends upon mission and demands that the organization faces. I mean, you may be in a situation 1 year where your functions are reducing in size, but if there's a change in mission or a change in demand, then I think in any given year, if you do need to start hiring back, even though you let people go, you know, you justify it. I don't know if that happens that often. I mean, clearly, if an organization's scaling back and they're cutting 100 jobs and they're requesting viewer authority and people are leaving or they're having to run RIFs, it's probably unlikely that they're going to be restaffing, but they may be just doing that in some parts of the organization where at the same time they're building up other parts and they're looking at it in a more siloed fashion. So it depends.
All right. Now, we're on the air. Today is August 29th, 2011. It's 10:38 Eastern Time. We're on for about another 20 minutes. Then after that, you can't call us. But you can call us now at 202-465-3080. However, we're not unapproachable, so that you can email us after the show, tomorrow, next week, next year. And our email is for your benefit, which it is, at nitpinc.com. For your benefit at nitpinc.com. Now, NITP is the company that sponsors this show, National Institute of Transition Planning, and we do mid-career, beginning career, pre-retirement, new financial planning in the class, psychological planning and the like, and I think we're fairly well-traveled, too. The primary business, of course, is local, but we go all over the country and sometimes even offshore, and would love to have your questions, and we sell nothing, and we farm no emails, so you'll never get an email sold by us, and if you can find anything on the website, drop us a line and I'll buy it for you, because there's nothing to buy and I can afford to not spend anything.
Very nice.
All righty. So actually, we got an email and Tammy responded to this on Saturday. And I'll read the question. If Congress mandates a reduction in federal force, will there be buyouts? I think we kind of covered that. Is anyone convincing management that buyouts would be cost effective for all? I think we kind of covered that. We're not so sure. And the last one, how can unions be used to help get buyouts so the senior employees will retire sooner?
Poor seniors. I'm a senior. I feel terrible about that one.
And as Bob indicated, there are some people are just sacred cows, if you will. You're not going to get them because of their maybe years in service, and you mentioned veterans, and you made a good comment there. That's the proper thing to do.
If you have high retention standing, I mean, you're not in jeopardy of losing a job under a reduction in force criteria. So it's entirely up to you. The people who are most vulnerable are the ones who have the lowest retention standing, which is why if an organization can avoid downsizing, to use that term, in these situations, avoid using reduction in force procedures and find other ways of making it happen, it's always to their benefit, as well as to the benefit of those who keep their jobs and those who might be able to leave early and never even considered doing so. It's a marketing effort to some extent, to a large extent.
Okay, and Tammy's response mirrored everything you've just said. Each age, and this is Tammy, each age will have to, each agency will have to decide how to accommodate the budget that they are given for 2012. Some will definitely need to downsize and may accomplish that through attrition, early retirements, and or buyouts. Some agencies will be hiring when there is a priority need, and others may not. This will all vary from agency to agency, and some agencies have already announced, and she listed a fair number of them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, her response, I think, mirrored everything we just talked about. So you got a budget, you may have to go and say, listen, we need this. What is it again? Vera VSIP?
Yes.
By OPM.
Let me get a little bit into the weeds, too. Some folks, you know, particularly those who haven't been covered by health insurance, maybe they've been leaning on their private sector spouse's plan, are concerned that, well, you know, if I leave early, you know, I've just decided to sign on for health insurance. I know I need to meet a five-year requirement to be able to take that benefit into retirement. The interesting thing about qualifying for a VERA is that it says that you don't necessarily need 5 years of continuous coverage. In other words, if you are covered by federal employees' health benefits in a plan, at least as of the date of the latest VERA window that's offered by your agency, and you retire, you take an early optional retirement because one is offered to you. If you even retire with a VERA window involuntarily, if you leave because your job's being abolished in that scenario, you don't necessarily have to have 5 years of continued coverage. You simply need to be covered as of the date the last window was opened. So those are things, too. I mean, there are a variety of things. It's OPM grants pre-approved waivers to anybody in those situations. If you've been covered by a federal employees' health benefits program continuously since the beginning date of your agency's latest statutory voluntary separation incentive pay or VERA authority. So for those of you who are expecting rolling windows of VERAs, which could be coming up, and you're just getting on board with the health insurance, you won't need 5 years of continuous coverage necessarily. And that's a good thing to know, because many people think, well, you know, I really can't take this because I need the health insurance.
Okay. You were kind enough to send fair number of pages up in anticipation of the show, figuring that I would read it, and I did. I'd like this one. It says, repayment requirement. An employee
yes.
who receives a visa and later accepts employment for compensation, and that's interesting, for compensation with the government of the United States within 5 years of the date of the separation on which the visa is based, including work under a personal services contract, or other direct contract, must repay the entire amount of the VSIP to the agency that paid it.
That's correct.
All right. So
with very limited exceptions, you know, there are exceptions that are made, which are actually on the next page of this. If the individual has very unique abilities and is the only qualified applicant available for the position in this organization, somebody coming back again before 5 years has expired after receiving the VSIP, then an exception can be made in that situation. Or if there's an emergency involving direct threat to life or property and the person has skills along the lines of that emergency to resolve it, then those exceptions can be made. But other than that, you pretty much have to pay it back. So that's something that people need to be thinking about, too. So what would I be doing then? Well, if I come back directly to work for an agency, then I'd be a reemployed annuitant. I'd be taking probably a hit on my salary, reducing it by the amount of pension I'm getting. And if I come back before 5 years has expired, I'm paying my VSIP back. Even if I come back, as you say, under a personal services contract where there isn't a pass-through organization, I'm working directly for a federal agency contractually, but it's a personal services contract. That's just like being an employee. So the way to avoid that is to not come back to work directly for the agency for a five-year period, or not come back to the government. Wait till the 5 years is up and find some other way of doing it. Again, when I took my buyout, because once again I was working for an organization not appropriated by the government, they basically said you can go work anywhere in any federal agency as long as you don't come back to work for us. If you come back to work for us within 5 years, then we're going to take your VSIP back. But we're only going to take it back proportionately. If you come back after 4 years, we'll take back 20% of it. etc. They had the ability to do very unique things. Most federal organizations do not. And the rule is, you come back to work before 5 years has expired, your VSIP gets paid back unless you're one of these very rare bird employees or have an emergency situation requiring your skills.
Wow.
So it's a consideration.
Yeah, I had individual I work with, unfortunately, passed a couple years ago, and he was a military, graduated from one of the military academies, and after his military career, he felt very strongly to go back to work for a place, and he lost most of his military pension until he retired from the place.
Mm-hmm.
And
this a federal place?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a time when that did occur. It doesn't occur anymore. Yeah. I mean, now you can get your military pension is not affected by your federal work. Quite frankly, a lot of people are retiring and they have military pensions and civilian pensions. And in some cases, they combine the two to make a larger pension. Now, they have to buy back the military time, but, in 4 or 5 years, they recoup that investment and then they get this bigger pension for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, the economic side of me said, what? And the emotional side said, I'm impressed. And I never forgot to tell him that. I told him every time I talked.
Yeah.
You're still not getting that?
Wow.
Anyway, but he was a fine person.
Well, good.
All righty. I think we got this Visa Vera business down. I think we have an idea if one is listening to the show or one should be listening to the show, of course, and the show can be accessed 24/7 for years. People play this. Agencies play it on their intranets, gyms. I don't think they do it at the cafeteria. But this is informative, especially for maybe an agency that's looking at this so that the people are at least prepped. I think we've given some prep. We haven't given 100% prep to anybody that would listen, but certainly you can email. And if we had to look at other things in the environment of cost cutting, I would think travel would get flipped.
Travel, training.
I would think, as much as I hate to say that, but I'd be naive to think that it wouldn't be.
But the biggest part of an agency's payroll is obviously its people.
Yeah, and the spinoff cost of that. It's not only the salary, it's the perks on top of it.
Right, it's the benefits.
The matching FICA and Medicare, if that's an issue. And it's the contribution to the pension. And it's, if it's FERS, it's the TSP match and the like. So there are a lot of costs other than somebody makes X dollars a year.
Correct.
And so that would be, I guess, the I won't say the easy place to go, but it would give you the most bang for the buck. I mean, how many paperclips if people use paperclips anymore? But what about a computer? Well, when are you not going to get it updated? Well, I was on the 3-year plan. Well, now you're on the 6-year plan.
The world of finance, you know a lot more about it than I do. For the sake of today, maybe a good thing to do would be – let's just summarize once again eligibility requirements. If I'm given an opportunity to retire early, what age and service criteria do I need to meet? And irrespective of retirement plans, 50 years of age, 20 years of service, or 25 years of service at any age, that puts you in the window of opportunity if you get an offer. If you're in CSRS, also remember that if you're under the age of 55 in any of those scenarios, you're going to suffer a reduction in whatever your pension is going to be. A reduction is equivalent to 1/6 of 1% times your high 3 every month, or generally speaking, 2% for each year. So if you had 30 years of service and you were going to normally get 56.25% for that 30 years, but you're retiring at age 50, then you're looking at a 10% hit on the 56.25%. So you're looking at a pension that's going to be reduced to about 51%. A lot of people think that the pension is being dropped by 10%.
Do that again slow. I tracked with it, but I know a lot of people that think just the opposite. They subtract the 10% from the 56.
That's right. It's a percentage of a percentage. Take my case in point. I was 49, had my 30 years in. So I took a 12% reduction of my 56.25%, 12% of 56.25%. So when you do that multiplication, it winds up being about 50%, but it's not a subtraction of 12% from the 56.25%. So that's usually good news for most people when they hear that. The other thing is to recognize also is that if you're in FERS, other than in a special occupational category, and you're leaving well before what would normally be your minimum retirement age, then in those scenarios, your FERS annuity supplement will not begin until you reach MRA. And then that portion of your income is always going to be tested for earnings. And it will be continually tested for earnings until you reach 62, whereupon it's going to go away, and you could draw early Social Security, which will be tested for earnings.
Okay, now what again, MRA?
Minimum retirement age. And the minimum retirement age for a FERS employee is dependent upon when they were born, typically falls between 55 and 57. Most folks under FERS who are retiring in this day and age have an MRA of about 56.
Okay, and that supplement for the FERS folks would be from whatever that MRA is up until, what, 62?
Up to 62 when you're eligible for Social Security. You may not be able to draw it. You might be working too much. But as soon as you reach eligibility for Social Security, the annuity supplement stops.
But the Social Security kicks in.
It could if you apply for it.
Okay.
And if you apply for it and are eligible to receive it because you are genuinely retired or you are not working to the extent that you've eliminated Social Security. You know, it's a pretty low threshold. $14,160 is all they'll let you earn before they start winnowing away at your Social Security.
So it's better not to apply for it. But I guess you could always... I'm not going to apply for it now because this is what I'm going to do, and then I don't want to do it before I hit the other age. I can always go and apply for
always.
It then, or I have to make the economic decision. Do I wait another year, two, or three? How much would I get? Otherwise, I'm getting to be an accountant with this.
Well, when you think about it, though, if your full retirement age for Social Security was 66 and you're thinking about drawing it at 62, but then you're waiting, every year you wait, it's roughly 6.25% higher. Till you reach that full retirement age, your benefit is higher. You're not getting paid anything in the interim, but if you're still working, it doesn't matter because you probably are making too much money to get paid anything anyway.
Yeah. And I...
That's a tangent.
No, this is good, too, because the FERS folks that do get the supplement is paid through the OPM pension,
correct.
But it's really subject to the Social Security laws.
It is. It's designed to be a bridge to Social Security. It's an extra piece that OPM gives you, but it is subject to the same Social Security earnings test, and what you get is actually based on Social Security contributions made during the federal portion of your working career.
Right, and as Bob said, if you earn roughly more than $14,000 a year...
It starts to go away.
It starts to go away.
I think effectively it's gone if your income is roughly $44,000 a year.
And some folks listening might be saying, how would OPM and Social Security ever know? Because it's coming under the OPM pension. It's pretty simple because Social Security gets a copy of the W-2.
That's right.
And it won't take much to match the two up.
It's true. And, you know, you also have to report income to OPM every year. So if it appears as though you're going well beyond the required amount or the minimum amount that they'll let you do, then they're going to cut off your supplement. And if by some chance you get overpaid, they'll recover it next year in 10 equal installments from your pension.
All right. Well, final comments. We got about 3 or 4 minutes left. Planning. What I mean, when you did this, you had a plan, though.
Well, you know, it's interesting. My plan sort of developed within the 3 or 4 months of the window. I mean, first of all, was I really going to do this? And I thought to myself, when am I going to get an opportunity like this? Still relatively young. And granted, circumstances were different. We're in a tough time right now, and jobs are not as prevalent. But still in all, my plan ultimately just developed out of sitting back and thinking about it. I think folks now have an added opportunity to think about it in advance if, after hearing today's show or through another source, understand that they would be eligible for an early out. This could be something that they'll get in the next year or two. And if that's the case, between now and then, you can start thinking about, all right, if I can pension out of the government early and take my benefits with me, then there may be some other working opportunities for me to do. It's the important thing is to think out of the box. Don't look at it as retiring per se. Look at it as giving yourself an opportunity to move on to perhaps do something else and even come back externally to the organization that you were a part of and be an advisor or a consultant or a mentor. but a different capacity. It's an interesting thing. Being an external sometimes gives you, you know, more power to influence things. You know, being part of an organization, as important as it is, when you're in the infrastructure, perhaps you don't see the fruits of your labors as readily as you might being on the outside.
And when you're doing this, I don't think we should be so not get blindsided by economic realities or even beneficiaries. Who's the beneficiary of your thrift? Well, you know, it's somebody maybe we don't want it to be. So there's planning to do other than this huge emotional thing. But the financial side, you know, what's my base level of income? What are my expenses? Do I have more expenses than income? And what do I do?
Sure. And that's always a juggling act. It's always changing.
But you did it, and you jumped into the pool. I don't know if you held your nose, but you jumped into the pool.
No, I consider it to be the most important and best decision I ever made in my life.
Wow.
But, you know, that's me, and it's going to vary from person to person. It's not right for everybody, but if you think about it, if you're outside the box and you really think in terms of what the benefits can be, I think it takes away some of the angst.
I am certain that if this happens, I'm not certain that it is, but if these things start to come on, we're going to devote some shows that'll be just like what we did here, but then we'll do another show just on finance in this situation. But anyway, it's been great having you here, Bob. Next week, we're going to have a best of show. I don't know what it's going to be, whether it's the Roth show or whether it's going to be this show again. But anyway, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks, but we'll be on next week. Please
listen.
Always
a pleasure, sir. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.